You're listening to The Dollop on the All Things Comedy Network. This is a bi-American history podcast where each week I, Dave Anthony, read a story from American history to my friend,
Gareth Reynolds, who has no idea what the topic is going to be about. So you did bi-American because you feel a divide in this country. Are you sort of, is that your way of sort of, are you sending out a signal to people, Dave?
I want people to come together. I think we need more love.
I agree. Yep. And
we are starting a new group called Hugs Across America.
Mm-hmm. And Hugs and Drugs.
Hugs and Drugs Across America. And our idea is that we're going to start a big line and everyone's going to hug someone else. And it's going to go all the way around America. And at the same time, people are going to pass whatever drugs they have. And yep. when the hugs get all the way to the ocean, the beach in California, Gareth and I will be there to hug the final person and then take all of the drugs.
Yep. Yep. That'll be the end of it.
That's the whole idea.
It's a weird charity. It's a charity, yeah. By the way.
It's a charity. Yeah, it's a 501c, I think.
I should probably tell my little story I want to tell you after the ads.
Okay, well, then let's do the ads. Or no, we're going to do the music. We'll do the music, and then you'll tell your story after the ads. That's right.
Okay, great.
Or you can tell your story before the ads.
Okay, great.
Okay, music now. And called it, quote, his jam pad.
Jam pad?
I'm the fucking hippo guy.
Dave, okay.
My name's Gary.
My name's Gary.
Wait. Is it for fun?
And this is not going to become the Tickling Podcast.
Okay.
This is like anarchy.
On a five-part coefficient.
Five rounds of play.
Now hit him with the puppy. You both present sick arguments.
No sleep till hippo.
No sleep till hippo.
Action part.
Hi, Gary.
No.
Nicely done, my friend.
No. No.
Rhoda. Rhoda at the court.
Wow, and that was so good.
Yeah, it really was.
What a jam. So my mother was, I'll make this quick, my mother was watching this quiz show, and she said this clue came up about this guy named Frank, last name begins with an L, I can't remember. And she's like, and essentially what he did is at an Olympic event, he got in his manager's car, and his manager like drove him half of the race, and he won the gold. And then, like, 2 days later, they took the gold away from him because people were like, hey, that guy was actually in a car for a lot of the race. And I go, oh, wow. I go, that's amazing. I go, what's his name? And I Google him, and it's, you know, there. And I Bing him. Sorry, I don't use Google. I Bing. And I go, oh, yeah, okay, all right. And then I'm doing a little more research, and then I see it says 1904 Olympics. The one it took place in, the wildest Olympic Games ever. And I go, oh, okay, great. And I go, is there any books on it? I order a book. And then as I'm talking to my mother, I'm going, you know, this sounds really familiar. And she goes, does it? And I go, hold on. And then I Bing the dollop and 1904 Olympics. And sure enough, it's the Rory Scovel episode. But the best part, and unfortunately, maybe I'll post this picture, but... the book I ordered, Dave, is totally for a child. It is a book, and it even says, where does it say? It says on here somewhere, like the age range is offensive for me. I mean, it's on simonandschuster.com/kids is where you buy it. Should have been a flag.
Oh, my God. But, I should be reading kids' history books to you.
I mean, well, I will say when it got here, I was like, well, I'm glad I didn't invest too much in this, you know, and then this big, like, encyclopedia from the event. Whoa, what just happened to you?
I turned on a light.
It's got so bright. It's a little anyway, bright. I thought that was pretty funny. The book showed up, though, and I was like, oh, this is for a 6-year-old child. Great. Good. Good work,
That's
Gareth.
Really amazing.
All around. Really good, Gareth. An episode you've already done. You ordered the book for toddlers. The Learning to Read book.
That's better. Well, it's an enjoyable story.
Thank you. A little fun.
I mean, I think a lot of people are probably concerned about you, but yeah.
Yeah, yeah. No, my mother didn't find that to be awesome.
We're brought to you in part by Policy Genius. Look, if someone relies on you for financial support, whether it's a child or an aging parent or even a business partner, you need life insurance. Life insurance, it gives you peace of mind. So if something happens to you, your loved ones, they're going to have a financial cushion to pay for things like rent, mortgage, loans, education, just everything, daily expenses. And usually life insurance gets more expensive as you age. So it start a policy soon rather than, you know, waiting on it. So look, head over to policygenius.com and answer a few questions about yourself. And in just a few minutes, you can work out how much life insurance coverage you need. And then you compare personalized quotes to find your best price. You could save 50% or more on life insurance by comparing quotes with Policy Genius. And they work for you. So Policy Genius works for you, not the insurance companies. So you can trust them to offer unbiased help and advocate for you at every step until you're covered. They don't add on extra fees. They don't sell your info to third parties. So head to policygenius.com to get your free life insurance quotes and see how much you could save. That's policygenius.com. And we're brought to you in part by Zen Business. Look, a lot of things have changed out there in the business world. A lot of people are like, I'm not going to do this anymore. I want to find a new way to make a living. I want to find a way to run my own life and handle my own emotional well-being and not have to deal with a boss. I want my own business. Setting up a business can be hard, right? It can be very difficult. It can be confusing. And Zen Business is there for you. It can guide you, give you the essential skills and the resources to help you start and grow your business while you're balancing just, you know, keeping yourself feeling good and okay. And look, if you have a great business idea, it's very exciting, but then you're like, now what? Now, well, I don't know how to do all the business stuff. You don't have to be a business expert to start a business. There are people there to help you, and Zen Business empowers you to turn your awesome idea into a money-making company. Personally, I use Zen Business to keep compliant with all the state and the annual filings, all the stuff. I totally forget about it, and Zen Business can stay on top of it for me, which is great. Keep the business in good standing so I'm not getting in any trouble. Look, Zen Business has helped hundreds of thousands of people get their business off the ground by guiding them every step of the way and making it easier to launch a successful business. Get started today for as low as $49 at zenbusiness.com/dollop. That's zenbusiness.com/dollop.
February 14th, 1888.
What? Wait, that's so weird because it's like Valentine's Day and eight's kind of like a heart. It's like, oh my God, I'm already loving this one, Dave. It's a Valentine's special. Hold on, let me just say to everyone, if you are listening with a loved one, grab their hand because this is the very special Dollop Valentine's episode.
Peter Christian Berry was born in Edinburgh, Scotland. So we have a Scottish accent, gentlemen.
Crikey, what are the bloody odds of this?
His father was a butcher.
That's right.
Not much is known about his childhood. In 1914, at the age of 26, he emigrated to Australia.
So
we cut straight
26.
Through it. Cut straight
26.
Through it. There's too much going on in the rest of the story.
But we know there is stuff known before 26. It's not
really.
Just like
he wrote about it, but no one believes what he said.
What a great preview. Okay. All right. Yeah, 26, yeah. He goes to Australia.
He was like,
mad boy. We're shipping you off to the penal colony country. Go, get on the ship. You're off.
He was like, I studied at a veterinary place, and everyone's like, no, you didn't. So it's that kind of stuff.
Okay. All right.
So he goes to Australia. Now, that year, he went, as soon as he got there, he enlisted in the 6th Light Horse Regiment, and he told them that he was a veterinary dentist and had worked for 3 years caring for horses in the Royal Fleet Auxiliary in the UK, but he didn't. That's not something he did.
So we have a Scottish lying horse dentist.
That's correct.
Ideal specifically in the teeth of the equine. No, I can't. The people, humans' teeth are far too bloody tiny. I can't get in there. The horse teeth are big, the chompers. Simple.
Author David Ashworth is where most of this comes from. Quote, just under 5'11 inches tall, 166 pounds, with a with a dark red cheeks, hazel eyes, and black hair.
His cheeks sound bruised.
Yeah, the cheeks kind of...
What do you think of my lovely natural rouge? Looks just like he's been hit with a tack hammer in the sides of his face. Look at that, eh? I'm dead sexy, eh? Look at that, eh? Lovely.
Peter was sent to Gallipoli to fight.
Sure.
Obviously, that did not go well for the Australians. Peter said his right arm was seriously wounded after fighting. It's like 4 months, and then he was discharged. But he was actually there for 2 months, and he got a septic foot.
So he said he fought 4 months and got discharged. He actually served 2 months because his foot got all gross.
Yeah.
He had what we call gross foot in the medical business. He had what we call yuck heel.
He healed up on a hospital ship for a month, and then he was sent back to the front, but he was only back there for a day because then he got terrible, terrible diarrhea, and he was sent to England on a hospital ship.
Christ, I'll tell you what, I'm shitting so much, I might need to go back to the UK. I've got the shit so bad, I've got to go home. I know it's all right, but it's...
They know how to handle the shit there.
Nah, they've never seen Scottish diarrhea. It's absolutely... It's like a bloody fire hose. Oh, Christ almighty. Shit, I thought my fucking foot hurt. Oh, Christ. God almighty. I'll tell you what. Why don't you just have me bite the back of the vessel and then I'll just diarrhea us across the bloody ocean back home. Be like a rocket booster. Oh, golly. I'm hollow. I've got nothing left to give. I just crapped out a piece of paper that said, I owe you feces.
So he's in a hospital in England for a bit, and he's let out on September 14th, and then he went and worked at the Australian Army headquarters in Westminster as a driver for a little bit, and then in March, the medical board discharged Peter from the Army due to a shortness of breath.
Okay, wow.
Can't breathe? I mean,
yeah, well, I can't believe he was hanging, like, it's, I mean, his... They really want you back out there on the front lines. They're really willing to repair you.
He really seems like he did not want to be in the Army.
Yeah. So a lot of that is just kind of inflated stuff, you think?
All that stuff is real. He told other stories. He was like, I got hurt in the arm, blah, blah, blah. But that's all the true part.
Right. Okay. Right. But his stories were different. Giving other men diarrhea. So I have came up with a spell.
I didn't use anything that he said. I used what other people knew.
Okay.
He got into crime. He served 2 months for stealing a wallet. And then he met and married Florence Ebba Vince. She was 23. He's about 29, I think. And they moved into the Queen's Hotel in Leicester Square. And then started buying horses. And pretty soon had 8 horses stabled at the Epsom Racing Yard.
Wow, that's a lot. That's a lot of horses.
It is a lot of horses. Now, Britain at this time, it's post-World War I. They're flush. Crowds are packing into racetracks and going to other gambling places.
Okay.
Now, ringer, when you ring, it's when you take 2 horses, one slow and one fast, and you enter the slow horse in a race, and then it doesn't do that well, and then you change the appearance of a fast horse to look like the slow horse, and you put him in another race as what everyone thinks is a slow horse,
right?
And then that horse wins.
That's the ringer. Low expectation horse, right?
Yes.
Okay, so you create a loser only to hide your winner.
Right, you create a loser that will have really long odds, and then that horse wins, and you make a lot of money.
Right.
So you clean up. Now, the Jockey Club is a body that oversaw horse racing, right?
They're a tiny body, but still.
Yes. A tiny, large body. It's a large group of tiny bodies.
Right. Yep.
So doping horses was actually not illegal until 1903. Up until then, you could just dope away.
Sure. Great.
And then even after 1903, they made it illegal, but there was no one to enforce the rule.
Good. Right. Very... So it's similar to how we are handling the Paris Climate Accord.
That's correct. And then up until 1913, horses raced without names. So you could really...
What was the commentator's job? And the big black buddy's out in front, and then there's another brown one behind him. He's a little more brown, and the one who's a little less brown than that one's going up in front of him right now. But there's a black one behind him who's not as black as the one who was in front, but he's still a black horse, and he's moving closer. We got a white horse with a couple dots on it behind him. He's behind the one that's brown, but not as brown.
Go white! Go white!
As brown
guy
as that
with
one.
Spots.
The white horse is still behind with spots, but the brown one who's not as brown as the other one, but still brown. He's one of the three brown ones. He's moving up a little closer. One of the black horses is coming from the behind. The white horse is making a move. The white horse is spot making a move behind the brown horse. Now he's near the brown horse. It's not as brown as the other brown horse. I'm near the first black horse. Now he's taking the lead. White horse with spots are going to take it away from the black horse. White horse with spots.
Hey, I want to collect my winnings. I am 20% certain my horse won.
We have no real way of figuring that out. Here is your money.
Thank you.
Yes.
That's how this works.
By the way, we're shutting.
Yeah. Well, I was talking to my friend Frank over here. Frank has a name, and that's so I don't call him, hey, white guy. So I was thinking, name the horses.
That's a great idea.
Yeah. What's your name?
Frank. We'll just name them all Frank.
No.
And we got Frank going ahead. Now he's got Frank there. Frank's another one, and there's another Frank behind him. Third Frank, who nobody saw coming. Fourth Frank. Frank's in the lead. Frank's moving it.
So that's how that works. Up until 1920, owners could use aliases. So you could be like, I would like to race my horse. My name is Frank. And they would be like, yeah, cool.
All right, so, Frank, there's no rules. So there's no rules. And you could be named whatever you want to be named.
I just love that there's no rules and people are betting on it. It's just like...
sounds tough.
So in 1918, Peter Barry met Gilbert Marsh, who was a con man. And Peter bought a horse from him for $400. But then when Marsh tried to cash the check bounced. And he tried to get the horse back, but the horse was already on a ship headed for Ireland. So Marsh confronts Peter, and then Peter says, look, I bought that horse for a client, so that check, that client screwed both of us. Mm. And they said, where's the client? He said, oh, the client got killed when a German submarine sunk his ship in the Irish Channel.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yep, yeah.
And he was like, well, as long as we both got screwed by this guy who's dead from a German sub.
So this... However it happened, maybe Marsh thought that was an amazing lie because they started working together.
Okay.
Now, Peter had a 3-year-old filly named Mexican Belle and a 2-year-old horse that had never raced.
Okay.
So the 2-year-old was then entered in 2 races, 2 days apart, and Peter dyed Mexican Belle from bay to brown. Bay is like a reddish color. From bay to brown. And when he was done, Mexican Belle looked exactly like the 2-year-old.
Okay.
And it had to look like the 2-year-old because Mexican Belle's ex-trainer was going to be at the track watching the race.
Right. Okay.
So usually you had 2 horses because you would run the slower horse in the first race and then the quicker one in the second.
So is everybody just playing the ringer game?
I don't think everybody is, but it seems like a lot of people could be, yeah.
Okay.
I think that the main thing here is making the horse look like the other one, which is actually where the artistry and skill comes in.
So in many ways, this is a makeover competition.
Yes, very much so.
Okay. All right.
So usually you'd use the 2 horses, the slow one and the fast one. But Peter wasn't really sure about the 2-year-old. Like, it had never run. Maybe it'll run too well. So instead, he ran Mexican Belle in the first race and just doped her with laudanum. To slow her down.
Horses, right. Yeah, so the horse is like, whoa, fuck. That's good now. Barely make it now. That's a good pony. Barely make it now.
Sure enough, she finished last. And then Peter gave Mexican Belle cocaine with a syringe 30 minutes before the race.
Wait, is Mexican Belle the one he ran in the... That's the one he ran in the first race, too.
Yeah, for some reason he didn't trust the bad horse, and so he doped...
So he's...
Uppers and downers.
Like, Belushi-ing the horse?
Yes, that's right.
Okay.
Now, Marcia's job was to make the bets, but Peter wasn't as experienced as giving horses cocaine as he was at giving them laudanum.
Come on, snort it. Take a lump. Take a bump. Have a baby bump. Come on, it'll be great. You'll have, be able to have more whiskey after the event.
He's the Scottish one, right?
Yeah. So okay, he gave Mexican Belle too much cocaine. So she's chewing her gums.
No.
She's chewing on the reins.
You know, one time when I was a little baby horse, when I came out and my legs were all wobbly, I was a little baby horse.
Do we have any laudanum for this?
I had laudanum earlier, but when I was a baby horse and I was running around.
So she chews her reins so much that at the start of the race, Mexican Belle breaks out of the reins. And she runs completely out of control, comes in last, and then has to be chased down. And the guy who chased her down actually turned out to be her ex-trainer, who didn't recognize her. And they lost all their money, but Peter was still proud that the trainer didn't recognize her. So, win-lose.
Look, we've got to find our small little baby victories inside of this. And we died the horse properly, right before the horse died.
Yeah.
From a drug overdose.
Right.
Downers and uppers.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not great.
No, but it is also great in a way. So, and the good news is I finally have learned how to properly cocaine a horse.
I've lost all me fucking money.
Well, look, can I be the one who's, you know, responsible? Look, Mexican Belle's the enemy in all this. She fucked us.
You gave her 19 pounds of cocaine. 19 fucking pounds.
She kept snorting the bloody stuff. What was I to do? I don't know how to tell a horse.
Take her fucking head out. She's a fucking horse.
Well, the mistake I did was propping in all the feed bag. That was the foolish move. Just giving her feed bag full of Yale. Christ almighty. I don't know what I was expecting. But again, I do not feel like the bad guy here. I feel like, you know, only one of us has a pretend background in equine dentistry. So let's have some respect for the fake doctor amongst us.
Yeah, all right.
Thank you.
So Peter immediately sets up his next score using an alias for himself. He enters a horse named Coat of Mail in Stockton in a race for two-year-olds.
It's a toddler event.
For two-year-olds who have never won a race. So it's like not that good horses. Right. So Coat of Mail is a terrible, and finishes terribly. And then a guy named Walter Hopkins buys the horse right after the race. So Hopkins turns out to be working with Peter. And he's already bought a horse named Jazz for $800. And Peter isn't even at the race. He has picked up Jazz, and he has her in a train car, or him, has him in a train car. And as the train is, you know, going up towards Stockton, he's painting the horse in the train, in the boxcar. So now Jazz looks
I like to picture him like how, like, when Bugs Bunny would paint, he just gets a beret and the little, like, palette with the brush, you know? He's doing it like that. He's just in character. Okay, so I mean, and how quickly, David, does paint dry upon a horse's flesh?
They use different things. They use henna and dye, and, like, it's a process. Like, it takes a while to do, it seems like.
I would imagine to paint a horse is an undertaking.
Yeah. So he gets there. As usual, Marsh does the betting, and they're due to win 40K if this all works out with the odds and everything. They should win 40K.
Okay.
And Coat of Mail wins. But Marshall had not just bet. He owed a lot of bookies. So he told all the bookies about the ringer, and pretty soon everyone knew. Peter said it became such an open secret that, quote, whenever I walked down Coventry Street, I was certain to meet a half dozen people who would pull me up, finger my jacket, and say, "That's a nice Coat of Mail you've got on, but you've had it dyed." That's the kind of lying that he does. That's why I didn't.
You know, you're. I mean, he's horse famous. hard to achieve horse notoriety. And that's amazing. Yeah, the overt nature.
It's such a clear lie, and it's so funny that he like, no one knows who he is, but in his lie, right. like, everyone knows him as the horse guy, even though no one knows right. he owns the horse. Like, it's
hey, there's that Scottish horse liar.
So anyway, what happens is all these people bet on the horse, the odds plummet, and instead of winning 40,000...
She said, hose the pony, get the hose on her. We're going to, it'll be, she's not going to, oh, bloody hell. I'm trying to think of the plan now.
They end up winning 167 pounds.
That's not enough to cover the bloody paint.
Peter bought a fur coat and cashed his check with the guy who sold him the fur coat.
Oh, my God.
So, but what happened was, because of all the suspicious betting, the jockey club starts looking into it, and Peter just keeps going. He starts another horse con, and he keeps winning races, and he keeps running the ringer scam. Peter and Hopkins also made money selling shitty horses to racers in India. So Coat of Mail is the name of the shitty horse. So now people right. think the shitty horse won. So he made the shitty horses valuable. And then he would sell right. them, but he'd sell them to people in India where there's racing going on, because that's so far away that it's not going to get him in a lot of shit.
Yeah, that's like, yeah, you're shipping lemon horses.
So, yeah, and the people there wouldn't find out the horse was bad until they got to India.
Yeah, until they were like, well, what are we going to do? We're going to go to Australia and find this Scottish lunatic.
So Peter's possibly the best horse painter in the world.
Well, So? His, I mean, is that?
It's a skill. Give the artist his due.
You know, I used to want to be a pretend dentist, but now I've realized my bloody calling is actually painting ponies. I'm a pony painter.
So his fingernails are almost completely gone from all the bleach and ammonia he rubbed into horse hides.
Oh, my God. Well, think about their hides.
That's to make white spots.
Oh, my God. He's just... I mean, you know what? Can I just at least say this? Mm-hmm. It's nice that he's also damaging his flesh.
Yeah.
It's not like he's, like, you know, got a sponge. He's just putting his raw paw in buckets of ammonia. Bloody hell, that burns! Christ almighty! Woo!
He's an artist. He's not going to use a sponge.
Yeah. How dare I?
He used silver nitrate to color the noses and... henna for the hair. He used a rubber stamp for dappled white spots.
This is insane.
He removed tail hairs and he changed manes. Since these were three-year-olds running as two-year-olds, he had to deal with the teeth, and he used a knife and drill on the teeth. He said these were all the teeth skills he had learned in the army.
Sure, right, when he was shitting. So, I mean, it sounds like he should have, it sounds like he could have a makeover show, like a horse renovation show.
Oh, yeah.
He could have a show on HD, he could have Horse and Garden Television.
That's right.
Be like, welcome to Flip This Pony. Today we've got a five-year-old stallion, but we're going to turn it into a one-year-old pony. It's not going to be easy. Well, first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to knock out a few of these bloody teeth. Then you want to get your hand in the bucket of bleach. Really dip your hand in there. As you can see from my hands, they look like angel wings without fingernails.
Last night I watched 5 consecutive shows about turning shipping containers into houses.
Oh. Yeah. There are some moves like that right now where I'm like, yes, please. Have you seen... Have you seen the house that, like, flips into, it, like, builds itself in 10 minutes? It's the craziest.
I don't think that's real. Is this a children's book story?
Yeah, it's in my book about the Olympics.
Okay, I'll have to look that up. House that builds itself.
Yep, build house self. Yep, you'll find it. Bing it.
So, I mean, the big problem with this is tons of people betting on unknown horses. All of a sudden, all these people are betting on this horse, and that will always raise suspicion. So that's always drawing the attention of the Jockey Club. And on June 5th, 1920, Peter was arrested and charged with getting a check for 167 pounds under false pretenses. So they figured out how he was from that race, and they've arrested him. Hopkins is also arrested. Now, Peter gets out on bail, and then he gets arrested again a month later, this time for conspiracy. And this is based on another horse race. So
he should give himself, like, the horse treatment. He should, like, change his skin tone a little bit, fix his teeth.
Yeah, 100%.
You know, eye patch or something. If he's so skilled, paint yourself.
Yeah. Four other people were arrested.
Okay.
Marsh was not arrested. So
interesting.
Peter would later say, quote, "I could tell, for I know very nearly the amount of money that Marsh paid to keep out of the boob."
Well,
couple of things.
There's
here.
A lot. Yeah. Do you want to start? You know more than I. Do I even need to ask my questions? Do you just want to ask them and answer them?
Well, who wants to stay out of the boob?
Yeah. I guess out of the boob. It's not like, oh, man, I got in her boob. What? I was in her boob. So maybe it's not something you want. But so the slammer's the boob?
Yeah, slammer's the boob.
Okay.
And so he bribed a cop. That's what Marsh did. He bribed a cop.
Okay, so they were coming for him. He gave a cop money, and then he stayed out of the boob.
Yeah.
That bastard. He's not anywhere near inside the boob.
So, Peter...
get in the boob, you bastard! You're just as bad as we are, and we're locked in this booby.
Peter pleaded guilty. Everyone else, the other five, went to trial. So because he had pleaded guilty, they all blamed him and said that he had duped them. Right. And on the stand, Hopkins said it was, quote, "a disgraceful fraud to run a 3-year-old as a 2-year-old. So all these guys are like, I can't believe he did this.
Well, in all my years, I've never been so disgusted with the behavior of someone.
It's repulsive.
And does anyone actually know how to get ammonia off of flesh? I'm covered in it.
Hello, Governor. I do.
Oh, aloe. That's a good idea. He suggests we put aloe on it. Called us governors, he did. Yes, hand me some of that aloe. Oh, hello, Governor. That's lovely on it. Really does do everything. Quite a miracle liquid, isn't it?
Hopkins was found guilty. He got 15 months. The only guy of the five who was innocent was found guilty and got 15 months because the judge refused to believe anybody could be that stupid and thought he had to have been a part of that.
Wow, really? I mean, you're like, exactly. Exactly. Yep.
Peter ended up getting 3 years. The Times wrote, quote, "It is part of the national honor of England that one of the greatest of her sports should be conducted with clean hands." Now, it's the fucking dirtiest sport in England. I mean, we already went through earlier all the shit that was going on. Yeah, the sport with nobody has a name. That one.
The one where you literally get to just go there and create a character for yourself. It's hard to believe that wasn't on the up and up. All right, I'm going to go to the track. And who are you going to be? I'm going to be a Catholic gymnast.
I mean, at this point, the Jockey Club is accepting horses that there's barely any proof they're real. I mean, it's still just, you know.
This is just two guys in a horse costume. They'll race. Once we coke them up enough, they'll race.
So Peter did his time in Dartmoor Prison, and he got out. His wife had a baby 5 months after he got out, and now, I don't know if you're a big math guy.
You love numbers.
Yeah. So,
I'm the human calculator.
So that doesn't work as far as him putting the baby stuff in the baby-making
place. It depends. How slow is his jizz?
It's pretty slow.
Yeah. Maybe he's got, maybe he painted some of his semen to look like other, I'll get there.
Yep, yep. So on the birth certificate, the father's name was just a dash.
Uh-huh, that's right. Dash, not dad, dash.
At this point, for some reason, the wife drops out of the story. She's not around anymore.
Interesting. Seemed like everything was going pretty well at home.
Peter then got one
She probably invented a spice, and this is the story of Mrs. Dash. Go ahead.
That's right. Peter then got one of the most popular writers of the day, Edgar Wallace, to ghostwrite his confessions. So he's out of prison. He's like, okay. I need a way to make money. I can sell my story.
Right.
Wallace was a huge horse racing guy, but a friend said, quote, he thought he knew everything about racing. I never met a man who knew less. Okay. So Wallace bet he lost. He always lost. That was his thing.
In the time when you're not even really betting in many ways, he can't win. Okay.
So Peter set up a horse race tip business, and Wallace ended up taking it over. I don't know how that happened, but I assume he sold Wallace the business.
Yeah, a stupid business.
Yeah. It didn't last
long. A horse
long.
Tip line? Yeah, it's like, what?
Well, it's Wallace, so he's literally giving the worst tips to everybody, so it folds within 6 months.
Oh, he gives the tips?
Yeah, the guy, no, you're...
Oh, I thought you were saying people are calling in like it's crime tips. He's advising. I thought people were like, that four-year-old pony's actually two. Don't ask who told you.
No, people call him up for racing tips, betting tips, and he gives them. So Wallace takes over. He's terrible. The business folds.
It's a key component in your horse tip business is having accurate information and insight into what horses will do.
It helps. Now, the reason he was able to open a tip business in the first place was because Peter had his confessions printed in John Bull magazine.
Quote, magazine?
John Bull magazine.
Sure.
I think John Bull's like what's our guy's name?
John Deere?
No, like our Uncle Sam type guy. I think that, isn't it John Bull?
I think it is. I guess so.
This is the headline. Quote, for the first time in turf history, the vial which has hidden the modern methods of rascality practiced by the unscrupulous underworld of the turf is torn aside.
Wow.
How long do you think they spent on that sentence? Hours?
I mean, it's hard to tell. Or if, like, it was said the first time, and he's like, that's perfect. It's catchy, and it makes perfect sense. It's as coherent as a headline could possibly be. Get it in the paper, and get it in the paper fast.
So Peter promised to tell all of the racetrack cons he had been a part of, and it's a 15-article series.
Okay.
After Peter declares, quote, with me, ringing is a thing of the past. My mind is made up. Never again.
Uh-huh.
But he has no skills. I mean, it's not like he can get into circus horse painting. Like, it's...
Sure,
There's no right. job.
Yeah, he's Horse Casso.
He did... and then there's a depression happening also. So he has a record on top of that. So he's just unemployable.
Bad, yeah.
So he decides to leave the country, and he takes a ship to Canada. On the ship, he dressed up like a priest and was so convincing the captain asked him to preach the ship's sermon on a Sunday.
Oh, my God. Is there a better... brothers and sisters, take hand in hand and put your hands together. Maybe don't hold hands. That was a strange thing for me to say. I've done this many times before. Ah, the Lord hath seen over this lovely vessel for quite a time, and I think it's about time we paid the piper, as it were, and let the Lord know how great we... think he is, and he is male. Heads down, please. Oh, sweet father, you are so great. Some of the waters were rough, but for the most part, you didn't anger the sea on our behalf, and we can't tell you how much we appreciate it. You are so good, based on the Bible, a book that is filled with stories about your brothers and potentially your sister, maybe not, but might be. Probably gets into your mum a bit as well. Your dad was able to get your mum pregnant without actually putting it inside her. And that's quite magical.
I don't think you're right.
The idea of being able to have a child far after ejaculate or not ejaculate is not too foreign to me.
Right. Hey, wrap it up. Wrap it up.
My wife got pregnant when I was in the boob for 3 years. I came out and she had a 5-month-old.
Wife?
And I tell you, the Lord works in mysterious ways.
You're a priest. Like,
of course I am. Yeah, I am. And I'm a horse dentist, but I'm mainly a priest, right? And when I say wife, I don't mean wife. What I mean is life. And by boob, I mean boob. And by baby, I mean Jesus. So the story I've just told you is actually one about Mary and Jonathan
and the baby Jesus.
It's not. It's not at all. It's not it.
It's the same, yeah. So
it's not. It's not at all.
I'm saying that he's looking over us, and it makes total sense.
You weren't.
Let's all have a quick hymn, eh? He is great, he's our Lord, and he's up there for sure. He is great, he's our Lord, and he's up there for sure. He's doing things in mysterious ways. We don't know, but he risks one of those days. He's the Lord. All right. Thank you, everybody. I'll be in the poop deck. Thank you.
A fucking ship, a great end, huh? That's it really went so out big. It?
Yeah, I'm him. I'm just as another guy complimenting myself.
So he arrives in Canada in 1923, and then he just immediately pays a bribe to get across the border, and he made his way to New York City.
Okay.
Now, there he got a job working as a horse groom with a top
horse. A horse groom? I do.
Top horse.
And I do again. Gives them a great feeling when they feel like they're married.
So he's working for a top horse owner on the East Coast, Sam Hildreth.
Okay.
And after a bit, he became Hildreth's chauffeur. Chauffeur.
I'll take it.
Ari chauffeur. he became Hildreth's chauffeur, and Peter soon came to know a group known as the Purple Gang, who were these violent bootleggers out of Detroit.
Okay.
So, again, like we said, doping horses, very common.
And he's falling in with a good crowd, it sounds like. He's really, he is turning over a new leaf.
That's right.
Right.
The tracks basically condone the doping. Peter, quote, "The sixth or seventh events in almost any track are known as drugstore races."
It's sort of how, like, SNL puts on the weirder sketches late.
So the Purple Gang asked Peter to find out what drugs Hildreth used on his horses. So they're just assuming everyone drugs, because they do.
Right.
So Peter took three of the bottles that were used to drug the horses out of the gloves, the car's glove compartment, and they had it analyzed, and it was heroin and cocaine.
I just cannot believe it's just crazy. They're just pinatting these horses full of these drugs.
I've never understood why you would do a heroin and cocaine at the same time.
Well, I think a speedball is a mix, and I mean, I don't know. It's supposed to be great, but I mean, that sounds like there's a tremendous downside. I'm sure at first you're like, oh, okay, yeah. But yeah, it's super fucked up is what it is. I mean, it's just obviously crazy.
So Peter would tell the Purple Gang which of Hildreth's horses to bet on.
I can't believe the Purple. I mean, at some point I do have to mention it is a very bizarre name.
Yeah, I should have looked
into
that.
I thought I'd hear it once and I'd be like, I could leave it. But now it's like, oh, the Purple Gang's a big player in here. I'm just picturing like the Wiggles.
So he would tell the Purple Gang which of Hildreth's horses to bet on because he knew all the scams they were doing. He was helping with the scams. I mean, there was stuff like they're using electric buzzers and just all kinds of nonsense. So
sure, yeah, let them know you're going to coke them up, heroin, or tase them. Give them the inside track.
In 1926, he and Hildreth had a parting of the ways. So Peter's on his own, and he ran a scam in Canada and was arrested. But instead of going to court, he changed his name to Patrick Christie and moved to Chicago.
Sure, Dave. Well, that's it. They always say, do you plead innocent, guilty, not guilty, no contest, or would you like to change your name to Patrick something or other and move to Chicago?
So he buys two horses, Calicua for $2,500 and Bobby Dean for $100. So you can probably guess which one's bad.
Yeah. Bobby Dean's smoking.
So he made Calicua look like Bobby Dean. And this is Peter Berry's very first ringer in the U.S. So the Purple Gang's in on it, and they're obviously very dangerous. Martin Marks was the leader of the gang, and he at one point killed 11 men in 14 days. So he's
Jesus,
not a guy you want to fuck with.
So you steal a wallet, you go in the boob for 3 years, 11 guys, 14 days, you're still out rigging.
Yeah. Well, you got to catch them.
It's a good system.
So Peter painted Kalakaua at the new track outside of Chicago.
Okay.
At a new track, sorry. And the new one.
I love how you can paint at the track. It's just like...
Well, I don't think it's not open yet. That's what it sounds like. It sounds like just been built.
Okay.
Or else there's no races happening at that time. They're happening at the other track. Because in San Francisco, there's two racetracks and they switch. Like, they'll run this one for 6 months and then that one for 6 months.
Okay. All right. Gotcha.
So Kalakaua is light bay colored and Bobby Dean is dark brown with a little white star on his head. So Peter gets to work.
White star?
Yeah. Two gamblers are lookouts, and the gamblers had fronted the money to buy the horses, and then they were going to bet a shitload on it. So after some time, both horses look the same, and then Bobby Dean is put on a truck and sent to a farm in Ohio, and Kalakaua goes to Lincoln Fields for the race on Labor Day.
Right.
Now, the Purple Gang and the two gamblers, super excited. They rented a room at the Congress Hotel 2 days before the race.
So they're doing it classy. They're like treating themselves. They're like, we'll make a weekend out of it. That's what
that's right.
You know what I mean? We'll get like the presidential suite. We'll order some calzones. We'll sit up there. We'll make a weekend out of it.
Yes.
You know what I mean? We'll do it right. We'll do it right.
I mean, they fill up a bathtub with champagne bottles.
Come on, we got a bunch of champagne. We're gonna fucking make it. It's gonna be like a long weekend, okay?
So they're just boozing and having a party for the $250,000 they think they're gonna make off of the race.
They're very sure they're going to make. I mean, if you're putting champagne in a bathtub, you are saying the trophy's coming home.
So Peter wakes up on Labor Day. And he realizes there's a really big fucking problem. It had rained for a few days, and it's still raining. Now, Kalakaua hates running in the mud. Hates it.
Also paint.
Yeah, paint. Well, somehow the paint stays on. Anyway, Peter...
Of course.
Well, it takes a little while for it to go away. So Peter goes to the Congress Hotel. He goes into the room. Right, it's right about dawn, and the party is still going on. These guys are just...
Hey, Peter, we're having the best time, man. We was just talking about what we're going to do with some of that extra money we're going to make. You know what we was thinking? We should get a plane. I mean, among other horses, because you're so goddamn rich. You said you had to say something. I'm going to let you go in a second. I just want to tell you how much I love you, baby.
Also, I assume there's a lot of cocaine. But anyway, Peter says call it off, because Kalakaua... will lose in the mud, and one of them told Peter, quote, listen, Limey, we've put up a lot of dough and come 500 miles to bet on that horse. You'd better start him or there'll be trouble.
Listen to us. You better change reality, you hear?
So.
You Limey.
He doesn't have any
choice.
Yes,
of course. I'll go find a way to make this horse better in the mud. Just give me today. Perfect. Thank you.
So it's a huge race. There's 30,000 spectators. It's the largest racetrack crowd since around 1900. It's a brand new track.
Okay.
Governor's there. Most of the rich Chicagoans are there. Tribune said it was like a grand opera opening. So Kalakaua runs in the second race. And the jockey had recently ridden Kalakaua in Tijuana, but the dye job is so good that he doesn't recognize Kalakaua.
Wow. So he is skilled. He is.
Yes.
I mean, that's pretty impressive.
Kalakaua starts well, but then slips in the mud so badly the jockey almost falls off. But he hangs on, and he recovers, and he somehow gets Kalakaua to finish third.
Okay.
Now, if you don't know betting,
champagne in
you
that
can
bathtub.
Bet. Yeah, you can bet for a horse to finish first, second, or third, or show. Show means they finish in any position in the first three. So the gamblers almost recovered all the money they bet. They were just short.
Okay.
So it wasn't...
It's not a catastrophe.
Yes, they hadn't lost that much. So he spared whatever violence could have visited him.
Right.
But based on...
Like, can you imagine watching that race as him? Oh, Christ, oh, bloody... like, his little Scottish heart, like, oh, Christ.
I would say this is when the gangsters started to own him. That would be my impression.
Okay, interesting.
So Peter headed to Havana next with his horses and raced for the season there. He may have wanted to get the fuck out of, you know, the U.S. after that, but...
Sure.
During that time, Kalakua was barred by stewards for being doped in a race. And then another race horse he bought that wasn't very good named Hot Dog kept winning. Look,
that's... That's just the worst name.
That's terrible.
Hot Dog.
Havana season ends. He comes back to the U.S. and he starts traveling around the country running the Ringer Con. He's using aliases everywhere. The sports editor for the New York Daily News at one point lent Peter $80. And a little while after, he ran into Peter at a boxing match and asked Peter how he was doing. Peter, quote, "I'm doing a little better now." And then he opened his coat to show off $15,000 bills that were pinned to the lining.
What is going on? What?
Isn't that
what
how
is
you...
he in the midst of? No, it's not. Yeah.
That's not how you...
Where do you put your money? I put mine in the bank of coat. He has. Did you say he had $15,000 bills?
$15,000. Oh, fuck. I forgot me coat. Oh, so, fuck.
Yeah, I mean, honestly. Oh, Christ. I think you gave me the wrong jacket, miss. Oh, no. Oh, Christ.
This one's got fives.
Oh, shit. $15,000. I mean, the point of having $1,000 bills. Can you break 1,000? No. Oh. Well, I don't think I can have an ale here then.
That's probably why they stopped making them. So the editor who wrote that story also noted that Peter was controlled by gangsters. Quote, "For the last 3 years, he has been the tool of gangsters of New York, Cleveland, Pittsburgh, and Chicago." So in late 1931, he was hanging around Nate Raymond at Duffy's Restaurant in New York. Raymond may have been the gangster who helped Peter buy the horse Aknaton, so for around $5,000. Okay. So at the same time he bought Aknaton, he bought two shit horses, Shem and Ep.
I mean, dude, their name together is Shemp, which is the shitty stooge.
No, they,
I mean, that
it's, yeah.
Shem?
I think the stooges were
around.
Yeah,
we didn't even bother to name them. This I one's think... Shem. This is nothing and turd. The what's two the, new horses we've got.
What's the shittiest horse name you can think of?
Crap. This is crap. This is crap. My pony crap. Come on, crap. Oh, Christ, he's lost again.
Yeah.
Crap sniffing all the bloody roses.
Yeah, so it was clearly named after the Three Stooges because...
Oh, it was?
Well, actually, was Shemp in it yet?
Shemp was late.
Shemp Howard came in, 1923. Oh, wait.
Okay.
Yeah. No. So this was probably, I would imagine this was named after, yeah.
Interesting.
That's a weird thing to name a horse.
Yeah, regardless. It's not like you're, it's a low bar.
So Shem had never raced, ever. Okay. He was just bad. No one, everyone's like, he's not going to do anything. So Peter uses the alias Peter Wesley and hires a trainer. So he creates a new alias to hire a trainer.
Okay.
He tells the trainer, the owner of the horse is a guy named William Marino. And then the trainer meets Marino. Marino knows absolutely fucking nothing about horses. And at the same time, he uses Duffy's restaurant address as his own address on forms.
Are there any red flags about this?
So
that you'd like to highlight?
And so people who are working with him now don't know what's happening. At one point, they have a driver transporting the horse, and Peter was in the trailer painting Shem at the time. So they arrive, and it's a different colored horse, and the driver's like, "What? Okay.
Never mind."
Peter, yes. Quote. "Considering horse faking is an art, then changing of Aknaton to Shem was a masterpiece. I worked on him in the van. I had to change his entire color and put two white legs on him, all in this moving van."
White legs on him.
Yeah. So that's bleach. Yeah, it's crazy. So now even the trainer thought Shem was Shem when Shem was actually Aknaton. So the trainer is now completely fooled.
Wow.
So he wins the race. Shem, as Acton as Shem, wins the race on October 3rd, 1931 in Maryland. The jockey was so surprised by his speed, he said, quote, "Good God, I thought it was on an airplane. What a horse."
All right, shut up now. All right, keep your bloody voice down then. It's nothing crazy. Just had a good race. That's all it was.
But Shem was a gelding, so that means castrated. And Acton was a colt, which means balls. So Peter,
I was able to shadow the testicles to make it look like the inside of the horse's thigh.
May we ask why there are little pieces of chicken down here?
Yes, of course you may. The chicken is there as a reward, potentially, at the end of the race for the horse. It's a way to motivate the equine into racing quicker, knowing at the end of the race it'll have some genitalized chicken.
Okay. So, that makes sense.
Yes, of course it does. Absolutely. You can see everything is on the up and up back here.
So to fix the testicle, no testicle situation, Peter put ice on Acton's nuts to retract them.
All right, there we go. All right, we're almost ready. The horse is painted, bleached. I've just got to retract its nuts, then we'll be ready to get out there. All right, I'm just going to ice the horse's nuts for a minute. Just try to make the testicles go up in the body. Yeah, reverse adolescence is the goal.
Now, the Morning Telegraph's writer, John Fitzgerald, thought the win was suspicious, mostly because Nate Raymond was screaming about winning and showing everyone his tickets at the racetrack.
Boy, it just seems, again, like, really, to get away with stuff, just don't brag about it.
Just shut up.
Just shut up about it, and you'll probably be okay back then.
So Fitzgerald started looking into Shem. And people all over the country, it turns out, had bet huge on Shem. 3 days after the race, the Morning Telegraph printed a front-page story titled "Killing Maid on Ringer," with the subheadline, "Shem, not Shem." Quote, it's the best, "Shem, not Shem."
Yeah, "Shem, not Shem." What the fuck is this paper? "Shem, not Shem."
Quote, "There is a strong suspicion that the most important ringing of many years was consummated in this event." So racing officials, it turns out, had come to inspect Shem, and when they did, Shem was gone. He had been loaded into a horse box at 2 a.m. and taken to New York and put in stables owned by a traveling circus.
Yeah, so it seems like it's a false accusation based on the behavior.
So now the powers that be...
We'd like to see Shem. Oh, Shem moved to the circus in New York at 2 a.m. last night. What are the odds? Jeez. Shem's a circus horse now.
Horcus.
It's a horcus. We call it a horcus. And what we've done is we've turned Shem into a horcus, which is sounds like a wizard spell, but it's actually when you take your horse and retire it to the circus, it's called a horcus.
So... The people who want to clean up, I assume it's owners and other people, they hire the Pinkertons. Now, Pinkertons were often used at racetracks, but now they've been hired to take Peter down.
Finally, some heroes.
Yeah. Peter arranged for Acton and Epp to be moved to Indiana. And then the head waiter at Duffy's had Shem shipped to Nate Raymond's property in New Jersey. Hey, we're committing a crime.
Just wanted to let everyone know there's some crime happening here real soon. It's about to go down.
Crime horse coming through. Excuse us, crime horse.
Hey, but this is our horse, crime.
And then after that, Shem was moved to a converted garage in Highlands, New Jersey.
It's great, just like up, nature. Just like nature.
It's just dumb mob stuff. It's like, this is really something you'd see on The Sopranos. Like,
this is like Pony Fellas.
So the guy who arranged that move was a bootlegger who had also sometimes managed training camps for pro boxing matches. So everyone involved is just...
Yes, it seems if you've ever touched the side of athleticism, you can have a horse in your garage.
So rumors started to spread that the ringer Shem was actually Akhenaten, and racing officials to try to track down Akhenaten, and they couldn't. The New York Daily News tried to question Shem's owner, William Marino, and reported, quote, he could only speak three words of English. I don't know.
Oh, interesting. So
soon after that story came out, Marino changed his last name to Martin and shaved off his mustache.
Alrighty, so there we go. And learned English probably pretty quickly.
The Pinkertons then located Shem at the converted garage.
Wow. And I mean, they are the horse PD.
Oh, it's crazy that they did that. And then another Pinkerton found two suspicious horses covered in blankets at the Indiana farm, but they couldn't figure out who they were. Like, I guess they couldn't get the blankets off and figure out. So they're... The Pinkerton...
Wait, these blankets are... No, you can't get them off. They are really on there.
Oh, these are weighted blankets? Oh, these horses are so great. Not stressed
that
out.
That really alleviates stress. They probably go to deep REM.
So the Pinkerton now is now just watching the farm. He's keeping an eye on it. And after a couple weeks, Peter bribes a local cop to help him get Akhenaten off the Indiana farm.
Okay.
And Akhenaten is now...
This episode answers the question, what if horses were drugs?
So now Akhenaten is now being called Sir John and is taken to a different stable.
Okay.
So the Maryland Racing Commission finally, after all this time, I think it's like a month, they conclude Akhenaten did race as Shem.
Okay.
And seven men, as well as Akhenaten, Shem, and Emp, are all banned from Maryland racetracks. So the three horses and seven guys who they think are involved.
I like how you ban the horses. You're like, you too. No, you guys aren't allowed in here either. Did a lot of messed up stuff with the knowledge.
It is hilarious. Like it's just the crazy idea. Why would you ban the horses? The horses are not.
The horses are not going to come back without these assholes who you've banned.
I made $30,000. Nay.
Yeah. Honestly. Yeah. And your name? Not John Horse.
I'm a cat.
Okay.
So the officials cannot figure out who Peter is. They don't know of the seven guys who's the guy in charge and which one's Peter. They did ban Peter Christie.
Right.
A week later, Peter painted Akhenaten and raced him as Hickey in Maryland.
So what's happening essentially? I mean, it's like three card pony. But so they are. They are trying to, while they're trying to determine just exactly what the hell is going on and who Peter is still using these contraband horses and still manipulating appearances and doing what he does.
Faking names and, doing his thing.
Right. Okay.
Even in the state that's just banned him, he could go to another state, but he just doesn't.
Right. He's just like. I mean, he's lazy. He's brash.
So, in that race...
I can't be fucked to go all the way to fucking Virginia. I'll just do it again here. Screw it. It's like, what?
So, the gangsters in that race won $200,000 betting.
Okay, wow.
So, the stewards are super suspicious. So, they asked Hickey's previous owner to come down and ID Hickey. We want to make sure this is Hickey.
We're here about Hickey. We're wondering if you could come down to the horse track and identify if Hickey's really Hickey or not.
Well, the only way I could do that is by the Hickeys on the underside that I put there.
Well, sir, it's really a pick your poison situation we're in here. And while what you're doing is certainly not okay, we will take it. So you may come down and try to identify Hickey as long as you stop licking your lips so much that
now I'm gonna need to get in there and
now that sir you said all you need to do is see the Hickeys.
Really give I go by taste also. I'm really gonna give Hickey a suck. Put some on there.
No, that's a simple deal breaker for us. We are looking to have we will allow you to look at the underside where you said you've what did you just do? Why did you moan?
Well, I was just thinking about the taste of my horse.
Okay, we need your help, but we are not, we are really thinking about not using it because the
man, just sometimes, very, sometimes I thought like, how
don't
could I
talk
get,
for a,
how could I get that taste into a pie?
Okay. That's just not acceptable to say to people who don't know you. Pick or people who do. No, don't. No. We'll let you put two hickeys on hickey, but please help us identify the reality. Say,
I'm going to count off of seven?
No, sir. Absolutely not. That is just. That's that. No, that's just.
Teen.
No. No. What's your problem, sir? Seven was egregious. That's ludicrous. That is not. We said two. Yes, we'll drive.
Okay.
Fucking.
I'm going to need a hotel room with me and the horse.
Why? Why? You live two, this is 3 minutes away. You need a hotel. What are you going to, why? With, not, you understand we can't get Hickey into a hotel.
With a jet tub.
You want a hotel with a jet tub and be allowed to give your horse Hickey 17 Hickeys?
That's right.
Well, I just realized we have the wrong address.
Oh.
Christ.
Oh, my.
Oh, yeah, my indeed.
So the ex-owner comes, and he IDs Hickey right away because they had switched the horses.
Okay, wow.
So.
I mean, what a shit. This is like David Copperfield level of animal switching.
So Peter goes to New York to collect his share of the 200K, but the gangsters tell him it had already been lost in a dice game. Quote,
hey, it's gone.
Hey, we've all had a tough break. Never mind, Limey. You'll get your money some other time.
Wow.
So
that's crazy.
Peter never has very much money, and this is probably one of the reasons.
And he's owned by them, like yeah, you said. So yeah. There's really little he can do. Wow, that's terrible.
So Peter starts racing a new horse, Gailmont, that was so slow the previous trainer had said, quote, I can throw my hat faster than that horse can run.
Okay. And is he buying? It's not good, obviously.
It's not.
Well, could you get a jockey on your hat is the next question, I suppose. Do you think it would go faster if you had a jockey on it? And there's the intention to have this, like, normally he's buying a couple of horses. Is he buying this horse because he's like, it's a good horse, or he's like, this one's garbage?
No, this one's
it's
garbage.
It's good. Okay,
This is the loser. So,
okay.
You know, so he loses a couple races, and then suddenly Gailmont is winning. He wins two races at Agua Caliente in Mexico.
It's got to be so funny for someone to approach you, and all the bad things about your horse are, like, making the deal a little sweeter to them. You know what I mean? Like when you're there, like, and how, is she fast? No, she can't move fast at all, actually. Good, good, good. What about, she get injured a lot? Yeah, she got a real bad injury. She got bad back leg, too. Good, good, good. She's smart. Stupid as it comes. Horse doesn't know nothing. Won't even finish a race. Gets distracted. Perfect, perfect. Yep, we'll take her. Top dollar, too. Just got to let this man suck the belly for a little while.
Hello, I'm Hickey.
We don't know much about him, Charlie. We keep him in a bird cage.
So at Agua Caliente, they were suspicious, but he had documentation of who the owner was and all that stuff.
Sure.
The Pinkertons had completely lost the trail at this point. He kind of dropped off their radar. They had totally fucked up until Gailmont started racing back in the U.S.
Okay.
All of a sudden, this race in Florida has tons of betting on Gailmont. So the stewards took Gailmont into custody after the race.
You're under arrest.
Gailmont had testicles. His teeth were an older horse's teeth. He wasn't supposed to have testicles.
Okay.
He looked and seemed exactly like a horse named Shem that had won in Maryland.
It is not impossible. No, I merely wanted to see Gailmont with testicles and went to a doctor and had them attached. It's as simple as that.
Overnight, his legs started to change color, becoming white. And then two men who were familiar with, who had trained or whatever, own Acton came and they confirmed that Gelmont was actually Aknaton.
Okay, so...
So, the Miami, or just Florida, bans 5 horses and 3 people. One of the people they banned was Willis Kane, who was actually Peter.
Sure.
But at the time, Peter was staying in a Miami hotel under the name Patrick Williams.
Sure. Okay. So they banned Willis Kane, who is Peter, who's already come up with another alias and is still in your city.
That's right.
Good work. Really good.
Now, the Pinkertons somehow learned about the alias, and they found out that Peter's car was at a mechanic's being fixed, and so they staked out the mechanic's place. And after a couple of days, Peter came to pick up the car, and he was arrested by the Pinkertons.
Okay.
Peter just straight up admitted that he had
When he got his car fixed, was the mechanic like, this Ferrari's actually a Volvo. What the hell?
Peter just straight up admitted right away that he painted actors. And he's like, yeah, I painted the horse.
Yeah, that's right. You painted the horse. What's next?
The New York Press quote, Barry is engaging in a little cuss. You cannot help but admire his brazen frankness. He's the best con man I ever met.
Great. Give so, me a compliment.
Painting horses turns out not illegal in Florida.
Of course, Florida loves to be the straggler.
The DA in court, quote, you can't charge a man with painting a horse. It's an unusual branch of artistry, but it doesn't appear to be criminal.
Florida just really consistent.
So I don't, it's, I would say, in all, it, I don't even know if it's illegal in any states.
Okay.
So.
It's actually mandated in Florida.
So they start talking about what they could charge him with in court, and someone mentions animal cruelty, but then Peter says, well, he fed them carrots when he was painting them.
And that works? People are like, oh, he gave him carrots while he bleached them. Oh, okay.
The judge asked Peter what he would give him if Peter was dyeing his hair, and Peter said, quote, a large scotch and a soda, Your Honor. And Peter was released.
I'm sorry, Dave, what, were they on a sitcom court? Were they in sit court? Was there a laugh track? And Peter, what would you give me if you were dyeing my hair? Well, scotch and soda, Your Honor. I can't stay mad at this guy. Get out of here, mister. Go paint your ponies.
It could also been that some of these people didn't think a real crime was being committed because you're only ripping off bookies.
Right.
Right. So it's like they're all like, I think that there's a shady area here that they didn't seem to care that much. The law.
Sure. Okay. Right. That kind of makes sense a little bit.
So right after he was released, gets out of court, immigration officials start deportation proceedings. Now, it's going to take 60 days before the case is heard. So Peter reacts to his impending deportation the only way he knows how, by going on a ringing spree.
Right.
So he goes, I mean, if before he was going at 3, he's now going at fucking 10.
Okay.
And the Pinkertons are back on his trail. I'm not even going to go into it because with all of the names, and it's so confusing over such a short period of time.
Crazy.
But just imagine a guy who is using different names. The trainers are all different names. The owners are different names. The horses are all different names.
The horses they're being painted.
I mean, I read it 4 times. I was just like, this is fucking crit. Like, it's just track after track after track after track.
Okay.
State after state, name after name, horse after horse. So the ringing.
How many horses are we dealing with?
Oh my God! There's got to be like 15 or horses or so. Wow. So I mean, it's a lot. And you know, you're talking about all the states and the racetracks and the names is really the thing that you're just like, I can't do this.
Right. Sounds like you're calling a horse race.
The ringing spree even confused the investigators.
Okay.
People involved popped up and then they disappeared. At one point, Canada suspended H. Williams, Peter Christie, E.P. Bell, and George Kestering. 3 of those were Peter.
I love the idea that they're rebanned. Like, he's just making up new names.
Yeah. That's all it is.
That's it?
Well, what's he going to do now? He's like, my name's Ezekiel Glove. They're like, good shit. That was easy, huh? Damn it.
Despite all this, Peter is somehow always broke. Part of this is probably because, like we said, the gangsters aren't giving him a share. But he's also known to not bet much himself on the races. Like, he would never bet a lot.
Interesting.
So he's not winning
very much. I love gambling.
Give me a $2 trifecta.
I don't. Oh gosh, I'm just very conservative when it comes to betting. I've spent $250,000 on this race, but I suppose I'll just put a five on him.
So he needs money. So Peter now did the same thing he had done in England, and he sold his story to the press.
Okay.
The New York Daily News quote. Herewith begins the most amazing racetrack serial ever printed. The story of Paddy Barry, ringer of horses and master horse faker.
they don't even have his real name right in the article.
I know, right? So Peter leaves the U.S. 3 days before the story breaks and he goes to England.
Wow.
The Pinkertons are now assured that he's gone. They know he got on a ship and left.
But a
month later, he goes back into Canada and then sneaks back into the United States.
Okay. Pretty easy.
And soon...
Good work, everybody.
Soon, Acton is racing again under other horses.
He's even
going
back to his old horses. He's not even bothering. He's like, oh, I can't quit you. Acton, you're my baby.
Papers are reporting on these clear ringer races. On December 30th, 1933, the New York Press ran a contest called Can You Tell Us Where Acton Is? If you could, you would win a year subscription.
So, wait. So that's how desperate. Right.
Everybody knows it's going on. So much of the papers like, can you find him? It's like, where's Wally? You know? It's
right.
And then at one track, Stewart sees Acton. The owner, Mr. Smithson, who was actually Peter, vanished. So they, after a race, they knew it was Acton instead of the other horse. They seized him. He just fucking bails.
Right.
A month later, two men stole Acton. So he's clearly in some sort of stable that the jockey club has.
I mean, the idea, this is an irreplaceable horse to them.
Yeah. So two men steal it and give it back to Peter. So clearly two gangsters are like, we got to make money.
There you
again.
Go. Repaint it. Paint her again, Peter.
Peter, now going by Mr. Garavan, heads for South Carolina.
Hello, I'm Mr. Garavan. Like caravan, but a gara.
I mean, literally, someone was like, what's your name? And a caravan drove by, and he was like, Garavan.
So... At this point, he's just always on the move. He's never slowing down. He's just constantly on the move. So in August 1934, he has a falling out with a gambler that he went in on a horse with. So Peter has a woman, possibly his wife. He got married again to some like crazy hot Irish woman. She's supposed to be like insanely gorgeous. And it sounds like she and two other people go to the stable and say where the gambler is taking the horse. And they say, that's my horse. I'm taking it. And the stable hand's like, I don't know what to do. So he lets her take the horse. But he follows them. And then they go to another stable, and there the stable hand sees Peter and recognizes him and then tips off the Pinkertons.
Wow. Being followed. This is before people knew they were followed, apparently.
So the Pinkertons arrive with the cops, and Peter is arrested. And he's taken to Sarasota County Jail, but he doesn't seem concerned at all. He's just like totally casual.
Okay.
An American journalist, quote, he was boastful and very proud of his feats, even though he was broke. So he's charged with taking the horse, but the stable hand then doesn't show up to be a witness.
Mm.
And
that's big.
Then Peter just says, look, I actually own the horse. And I'm not one of the three people who took the horse, and the jury finds him not guilty.
And also, Your Honor, again, if you were to dye your hair, I would give you a scotch and soda. Get out of here, you!
Scamp. I can't stand mad at this guy.
So immediately after the trial, Peter is once again arrested by immigration authorities.
Okay.
In October, he was ordered deported for entering the U.S. illegally, and a Pinkerton agent follows him to make sure that he gets on the ship, and the ship pulls away without him getting off.
Sure, but that wasn't the problem before. I mean, he, I know. He did, you know what I mean? He did it. He's like, yeah. Okay, yeah, that's right. Now there's no way he'll come back because he did it this time. He did it last time.
So he's back in London. He's 46. He's broke. He can't own horses in England. Mm-hmm. So once again, he sells his story, this time to the people, which is a,
okay.
Not the actual people. It's the name of a...
We will take it!
It's a 20-piece series, and it's published starting on January 20th, 1935. It's like half truth, half lies. Like, he's just making up shit, but then there's some true stuff in there. And when it was over, when the run was over, he made a deal to write 6 more articles called What Punters Don't Know. So giving up the secrets of the, okay.
Right.
the trade. Now, this led him to open up a tipster business, right? So now he's giving racing tips.
You know, the best thing to do is paint it. This is not what I thought it would be very different than this. Why am I paying for this?
So while those What Punters Don't Know stories are being published, a horse with really long odds won a race, and an investigation was begun. And the doctor who owned the horse turned out to not be a doctor.
Interesting. This is
and the doctor also turned out to have the same address as Peter Barry.
Okay, doctor. So,
but what it turned out was, because he couldn't own horses, Peter was now using people to front his owners.
Okay, right. So the natural progression now is that he is essentially painting owners.
Yeah.
Right.
So the Jockey Club starts to refuse horses that were owned or trained by associates of Peter, or just suspected associates.
Sure. I mean, the scrutiny over horses now.
And so,
does he feel like he's got wet paint on him? A little bit in the back. No, pass, 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 pass.
So he's constantly switching horses from owner to owner. Most of the owners have no idea what's going on.
Okay.
So one investigator wrote Peter knew a waitress at a cafe that lived near him and, quote, with his usual cunning, one day asked her how she would like to own a racehorse. And she thought that was a great idea.
Sure.
So when, so the person would buy a horse, and then when the horse won, the new owner thought they would sell it right after the race.
Right.
Right, so make a huge instant profit. And sometimes the horses are auctioned off directly after the race.
Okay.
So that's how they, not only are they going to win the race, or just the horse looks good, but then on top of that, they make money because the horse's value goes up.
Right, okay.
But what would actually happen is the horse would win, and then the horse would disappear.
Right, okay. So everybody wins, mostly.
Now, Peter had his tipping service near Trafalgar Square. Sometimes his tips were fucking awesome. And it got to the point where anytime Peter tipped a horse, the Jockey Club became suspicious. So he was now giving out tips, basically saying he was fixing a race.
Yeah. But he's not always, right? I mean, some of this is just...
I don't think always, but it also sounds like...
For the most part, his tip line... For the most part... He's just telling you his crimes.
Yes.
Right, okay. So his tip line is a confession line, essentially.
So anytime he tips a horse, the Jockey Club looks into that horse, because he's just...
Right. So they're like, okay.
But his scam is a lot more complicated now, because before he was just swapping out horses and using fake names, but now he's swapping out owners and using real owners.
I mean, it's just... Imagine trying to understand what's happening.
Oh,
if
God.
Like, in charge, you're like, ah...
So it caused him to have more financial troubles because more stuff can go wrong, and it does. And in 1938, he had already been in prison twice for 2 months for debt.
Okay.
So when World War II breaks out, racing is suspended for several months. So now things just go completely downhill. He has no backers. He can barely afford to buy a horse at this point. He certainly can't afford to buy good ones. And he couldn't even make the ones he could buy win on cocaine. The jockey club starts cracking down on trainers who are involved in doping. They're even banning ones who are not guilty. Like, they're just cracking down on trainers.
They're just paranoid, right.
On January 7th, 1951, the front page headline of The People was, "Ringer Barry in Racing Sensation. I've been doping." Peter admits that he has doped over 100 horses using his own personal concoction that he called the Barry Tonic. He said it did not contain dope. He had come up with this other mixture that made horses run fast, and he was still using it on horses for 200 guineas a pop. This isn't a confession. This is a sales pitch.
This is a marketing, yeah.
Yeah, Peter is now selling Barry Tonic.
New Coke heroin. Yeah, so he's doing integrated marketing.
Yes, 100%. Right. And 25 shillings a bottle, people are buying it. The bottle read, quote, "Shake bottle well 3.5 hours before race and you will have a winner."
Available to anyone.
Now, the People must have realized that they had gotten scammed by printing that story, because they, a month later, start going after Peter hard.
Okay. But that's still a full month of being able to sell.
His tipping business, they revealed, is a total scam. He had started offering $1 memberships, but after paying the membership, no one would hear from him. He wouldn't give any tips. So he was just taking money
right.
from people.
Sure. Well, he didn't tell you what you were a member of.
The People then analyzed his tonic and called it dangerous dope. It was full of potassium, bromide, caffeine, and booze.
The idea of giving a horse, again, I mean, it's just like, what what world do you think, like, giving a horse some gin is like, this is helpful? This will not hinder. This will hurt. This will help.
Oh, so the People called Peter a menace to the turf. And then the Lord complained that one of his horses had been doped, and racehorses jacked up their security. They started giving out passports to anyone who was authorized to enter the stable. So now you need a physical sort of ID.
Right.
Still, routine testing did not start for 10 years. The thing that could have fixed all this, nah.
Feels a little bit like COVID with us.
So Peter Barry, at this point, just kind of dropped off the map. His final attempt at publishing his confessions had backfired. In 1962, he was living in London at Australia House and told an official he never had applied for his World War I medals, and now he wanted to. And his request was sent to Australia, and on March 16th, 1962, he received his 1914-1915 star, his British War Medal, and his Victory Medal.
And his award for worst diarrhea.
The worst diarrhea. Or best diarrhea, depending on
best
how
diarrhea,
you.
Yeah. Right. It's probably best.
Peter lived in poverty another 11 years until he was 85. He was in government housing for single men, and he died on July 6th, 1973.
Wow.
The sources for this, Ringers and Rascals, A Taste of Skullduggery by David Ashforth, and then also another article on Historically, which is a cool read by Josh Nathan Casis, called History's Greatest Racing Cheat and His Incredible Painting Trick. So, look, we're going to talk about this in a sec, but first I want to say we're also brought to you in part by Pretty Litter. Like, everything in our lives is getting smarter. You know, I've got a smart toothbrush at this point. You know, cars, everything. Everything's getting smarter. Refrigerators, TV. Yeah. So if you're a cat owner like Gareth, we have some news. We have discovered the world's smartest cat litter, Pretty Litter. How has it advanced, Gareth?
In many ways, David. The first is that it gets shipped directly to your home, which is super convenient. doesn't weigh a lot, so it's not like lugging it. But the two best parts is that you only change pretty litter once a month. So you are able to change the litter once instead of often. And when you clean it, it has crystals in it that actually change color to give you a barometer on certain indicators for your cat's health. So if there's something troubling in your cat's urine, which is an obvious way to detect any problems, the litter basically tells you that maybe before you'd notice. So It is thinking of the health of your cat in a number of ways.
Beautiful. So look, your cat deserves the best. Your cat deserves the world's smartest kitty litter. Do what Gareth did and make the switch to Pretty Litter today by visiting prettylitter.com and use promo code DOLLOP for 20% off your first order. That's prettylitter.com, promo code DOLLOP for 20% off. prettylitter.com, promo code DOLLOP.
Yes.
So that was your first horse racing, horse racing dollop.
What was the first one?
The fine cotton scandal in Australia.
Oh, right.
Which was also horse painting. Not as well done.
It is crazy when there is one person who can create that much chaos inside of something.
Yeah.
You know?
It really
like
is.
One person, even if it's not to their own great success, it's still the level of fly in the ointment that guy was is wild.
It's also fascinating, like, I just can't imagine living like that. Like,
yeah.
I guess it's a thrill. Like, it must be a thrill that you're conning people and you're getting away with something because it would suck.
I bet it becomes work and I bet it becomes shitty. I mean, think about at the end if you're, you know, like, if you're doing... I mean, the idea, first of all, that people are looking for you constantly is quite a stress. But then on top of it, the fact that you have a finite amount of time you feel to make your money and, you know, I don't know. It always sounds so stressful, just so stressful to have to live that way, you know. But
it's
like if you do it for so long, what else are you going to do? You know,
That's
you can't
right.
teach an old dog new tricks. You can't paint an old horse new colors.
Yeah, once you're in it for that long, I mean, if you're a 45-year-old stand-up and you don't want to do it anymore, I mean, good luck.
Well, that's part of the thing that I think when you talk about, well, whatever, like when you talk about like a green economy, that is like the big, people are like, yeah, how are you, I mean, you get it. I mean, the idea is like, yeah, it's not ideal, obviously, to be like, hey, you got to do something totally different. It's like, all I do is paint horses. Yeah, well, you paint walls. It's different. The ammonia, you know,
it also because you know they get criminal records. It also that keeps them in the game because then it's doubly worse. Like then not only do you not have skills, but then all of a sudden you have a record. So what are you going to do?
Yeah, it's true. I mean, that is the thing we deal with today. Also, it's like I mean, you know, you just don't know the specifics. You don't know the reality, but it is sad. I mean, it makes you feel. Sad for the guy. He's a sympathetic figure because, you know, I mean, he does. I don't know. It's not even that you gain great insight into who he was, but the way that he's operating and the reality of those circumstances. I mean, I don't know. A lot of terrible things done to horses, but you still think this guy probably was like just someone who's. Just a liar, totally lost.
And I think it sounds like he got super into doing it. Like he got into the like art of it. Like he was super into like, look what I can do.
Yeah. Yeah. If you're the best at something, I mean, shit, you know, it's like Walter White.
Imagine that the horse's old trainer did not know that was his horse. Like, that's just fucking crazy. Like that must be like,
You fall down the wall behind there. You're like, Christ, I've got a gift. God, I'm so bloody good at this. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. And, I mean, again, you are being, like, bad to animals, but it sounds like the entire sport is bad to animals. The entire sport is horse racing still is you know, fucking fucked up.
Yeah, I mean, that's something that I actually didn't know until recently, how bad it is.
Oh, it's fucking...
Because the horse track I live near, Santa Anita...
Yes. It's crazy.
It's maybe the worst race horse track in the world, if not definitely the country. But they've had like They had like over 100 horses die in a year. Like,
they kill a lot of horses there, and then they bury them on site, and then they lie about it and all that shit. It is quite a scandal what's going on over there.
And it's just so crazy that even in this day and age where, like, I can understand in the past, but now it's just like, I mean, people are pretty aware of, like, what's good and bad for animals. And aside, you take out the eating part of it, but just, like, you aren't usually allowed to just torture and kill animals for the hell of it, which is essentially what racehorsing is. Like, it's not... You could make an argument with factory farming that, okay, meat provides protein. There's nothing of value coming out of horse racing. There's nothing...
If you're buying a ticket to watch an animal, I can't think of really any circumstance where the animal probably is having good treatment.
What about snakes?
What about snakes?
Like if I bought a ticket to see a snake?
What the fuck question is that? What are you even asking me? If you bought a ticket to see a snake?
Here's what happens. I'm going to walk you through this.
We're having a normal conversation.
I get on an airplane. I go to India.
There might be snakes on the plane.
I go to a small village.
Uh-huh.
Dude's like, we have a snake here that has eaten four people. It's a giant python. And I go,
sure.
Can I see it? And he goes, $5.
Dumb.
And I pay him $5. And then we walk out into the forest. And he shows me the snake.
Is it his penis?
I take it in my hand. No, and he... Are you saying that's bad? You're saying that's bad.
That is not bad, but also not what I'm talking about. So it's also insane and not what I'm talking about. It's a thing that doesn't exist. So no, that's not what I'm talking about. The thing that doesn't exist, you're right. It to me potentially pokes imaginary holes in my real argument. Yes. Well done, David. Well done. Well executed.
Thank you.
Seemed like it's how many times have you told that before? Because it seems so rehearsed.
It's a story I tell my kid all the time.
Oh shit! Yeah, I mean, yeah, you know, it all comes down to, you know, people need money, and
yeah,
people do what they, you know, if you live in a society that's based on paper, then you know, people need money, and people are going to do what they can to get money. And
it's amazing that when people don't have money, the stuff they'll do to survive and get money.
I mean, yeah, and this is very sophisticated, but yeah. I mean, this is what you do.
And look, a lot of people don't want to work. They don't want to have a fucking shitty job in an office. So, okay, so you did the horse thing instead. Okay, because, you know, what's the difference between being a horse painter and throwing horse races and working for an insurance company and denying people health care? Like,
I'll tell you what is the difference. Excitement. This is exciting. Yeah, so it is weird. All right. Yeah. Well, that was crazy. Thanks for the Scottish layup. That's always fun.
It's always money. I think they call that money.
We should start signing horses.
We sign
with
horses.
With paint.
We do.
Oh, good. Okay.
Yeah, we've been doing
it. We bleach ponies.
Yeah, we bleach mules also.
We bleach mules and ponies. Thank you.
Munis.
Good work at the end there, Dave.
Thank you.